So good afternoon. Welcome everybody to this session. So we'll have a tutorial on learning constraint models. Our speaker is Dimos Tsourous, and I can assure you that even being after lunchtime, you will not fall asleep. So Dimos has prepared a very lively tutorial, and we'll have breaks every 30 minutes for Q&A. And I will briefly introduce you to Dimos, who is currently a postdoc at QO11. His expertise is in interactive constraint acquisition. He earned an honorable mention in the Doctoral Dissertation Award of ACP in 2022. For his PhD, he has a strong interest in rich interactive techniques between users and solving systems, focusing on a more human-aware approach to the constraint-solving process. Thank you, Dimos.
Thank you very much. So yeah, I will not let them fall asleep. So I'm very excited to present this tutorial. I've been working on constraint acquisition, more specifically on interactive constraint acquisition, the last around 6 years from when I started my PhD, and I continue to work on it. So yeah, I hope you enjoy the tutorial. So what is constraint acquisition? Let's start with that. We all know constraint programming is used to solve combinatorial problems in AI in many different cases, and it follows the model plus solve paradigm. So nowadays, we just use an automated solver, a black box solver that we find a solution for that for us. And the main thing the user has to do is basically to model the problem and give the model to the system. But what is the problem here? Modeling is not always trivial. It requires expertise, and it's a bottleneck on the wider use of constraint programming. There has been also other papers in this CP and in previous CPs trying to tackle exactly this bottleneck, and with much research going on this direction. So constraint acquisition is one of the directions to do this, and it tries to assist the user in the modeling process. Basically, transforming the whole process into this, a user interacting with a constraint acquisition system on the modeling, and after the modeling is done, a solver solves the problem and gives a final solution. So there are mainly two types of constraint acquisition. There is passive acquisition, that the user gives some examples, some existing examples of the solutions and maybe non-solutions of the problem to the constraint acquisition system. And the system, based on these solutions, tries to find which constraints are in the problem or not. And in the interactive acquisition, we have basically an interactive approach between the system and the user. The system asks some queries, some questions to the user, which the user has to answer. Based on this interaction, a CSP model is returned, and then you can solve your problem. So my expertise is mainly on interactive constraint acquisition, and I will focus more on this tutorial on interactive acquisition, but I will also cover the main strategies for passive. So something more concrete about constraint acquisition. Basically, it follows this process. It gets the vocabulary from the user. The user still has to do some modeling by himself. So the user has to model the variables and their domains and gives it to the system, and gives a constraint language consisting of basically abstract relations, like I may have not equal constraints, equal constraints between two variables, and goes on. Based on this constraint language, a set of candidate constraints is created and is given to the system alongside the vocabulary. And the system, based on this, depending on the process, extracts a set of constraints, CL, that is the learned set of constraints, that we want at least to be equivalent to the unknown target set of constraints. So here is a small example on a 4x4 Sudoku. So we have the variables of the problems that correspond to the cells of the Sudoku. We have the language. The user may not know that it's only not equal constraints here. We use, for this example, fixed arity constraints, binary constraints. So the user may not know that it's only not equal constraints here. So may give also the equal relation, greater than, less than, and goes on. So based on the above, the candidate constraints are created in all combinations of variables. And below you can find an example, which what an example means is an assignment on the variables to the problem. And based on this interaction, the learned constraints need to be extracted. So, constraint acquisition in general follows, tries to adapt the candidate elimination paradigm. We have, so imagine that this is the set of all candidate constraints that we have. They can be many. So we have a part of that set that should be removed, should be excluded and not be acquired. And there is another part, the target set of constraints, that should be acquired. So we start with a full set of candidates and an empty, possibly, set of learned constraints. And the goal is basically to increase the part of the constraints we know and decrease the candidates by removing constraints until we converge to the target set. So how do we learn? Does constraint acquisition systems learn? So from positive examples, if you give a solution to the problem to the acquisition system, then the acquisition system knows that every constraint violating this solution cannot be part of the model, because it would not be a solution if it was. So you can safely remove all these constraints violating the positive example, the solution. Now, from negative examples, from assignments that are not solution of the problem, you know that at least one of the violated constraints should not be violated because it is part of the problem. If there was no constraint that should be learned violated, it would be a solution. It would not be a non-solution. So basically, in both cases, we learn from the violated constraints of the problem, both in positive and negative examples. So let's start with passive acquisition. So in passive acquisition, the user gives solutions, and the green ones, and non-solutions, the red ones, to the acquisition system. And based on these examples, the constraints of the problem or an approximation of them is returned. So there are many, many different approaches on passive acquisition. You see here a categorization. So they are different approaches on how they try to tackle this problem and also target on different things. I will not cover all of them, but I will cover some main categories. So we have the CONAC system, one of the first, if not the first system that was presented for passive acquisition. So you get the examples, the set of examples of solutions and non-solutions, and the set of candidates, E and B, respectively. And you go through each of the examples that you got. And you test which constraints are satisfied and which constraints are violated in the example. So you get the violated constraints, because only them we care about, only they can give us some information. And we see, is the example a positive example, a solution of the problem? If it is a solution, you can safely remove these constraints. We don't care about them. They cannot be part of the problem. If it is a solution, if it is not a solution of the problem, then we can safely add a disjunction of constraints, of the violated constraints, to the learned network. We'll know that at least one of them is part of the target set of constraints. Note that when we remove constraints from the set of candidates, we can also remove them from the disjunction in the learned set of constraints. So basically, after you pass through all the examples, you have a set of constraints that, hopefully with a few disjunctions, which can represent basically the whole version space, all the constraint sets that can be representing the problem. So the previous algorithm, CONAC, was focusing mainly on fixed arity constraints, not on global constraints. This is the case also for most constraint acquisition systems, with an exception, the model seeker system. So it tries to learn global constraints for data. So I hear you asking me, how can you generate a set of candidates from global constraints? It is exponential. The candidates are too many. You cannot even represent them. So model seeker actually follows a different approach. So it gets global constraints in the language and patterns that probably are probably existing in the target set of constraints. For example, an all different can be in rows only, not in all subsets or variables of the rows, or in columns, and goes on. So after you get the language and the patterns, you only construct the candidates, the candidate constraints that follow the patterns given by the user, so with some domain knowledge. You also get positive examples only. It cannot learn, it does not use at all negative examples. And it transforms them to some convenient form. Like if you give a vector, it tries to find if it can construct a square matrix or something like that to see if something can be found in there. It takes the candidates and the positive examples, and it basically tests the candidate constraints if they hold on all the examples, if all the solutions satisfy the given constraint. It's actually a bit more than just a violation test, but I will not go into more details. And then after it extracts all the candidate constraints that are satisfied by all the examples, it basically keeps only the ones that are not implied by another. And you have the final set of constraints. But both the previous methods did not accept noisy examples. If you gave one false label to the examples, if you accidentally thought that an assignment is a solution and it was not, then it's done. The system failed. So we also needed approaches that are robust to noise. So there are a couple of approaches. ACK, a classification-based approach, was proposed in the literature to tackle that. That basically uses a machine learning classifier, NB, naive Bayes, and tries to extract probabilities for the constraints from that based on how many are violated and how many are satisfied in what examples. So basically, it transforms the examples that we have that are assignments to variables into a machine learning data set. What are the features of this data set? There is one Boolean feature for each constraint, for each candidate constraint. If you have 10,000 constraints, then you have 10,000 features, saying that for this example, these constraints are satisfied, value 1. These constraints are violated, value 0. Based on this machine learning data set, it just trains Bernoulli and B in the examples, both positive and negative, and it extracts the probabilities for the constraints based on how many constraints were violated in the negative example. Sorry, each constraint, how many times it was violated in the negative examples and how many times it was violated in the positive examples. And based on that, it uses a threshold to extract the correct constraints. Another statistical approach in the literature is SECAC. So what was the problem with Bayes-ACK? If you have, well, I don't know, 100,000 constraints, you have 100,000 features. And if you have a lot of examples, this is a machine learning data set that will be really slow to train a classifier on. So the authors thought that, okay, this needs to be a bit faster. So they proposed SECAC in a follow-up approach that also can handle noise in a training set, but much, much faster. So it's basically takes again the examples and the candidate constraints and two thresholds. We will see in a bit what they do. So it takes one by one all the candidates. Important for that. If it takes one by one the candidates, it needs to generate them one by one. It does not need to hold them all in a set at the same time. So if you have 1 million candidates, you can have just generating them one by one and done. Then it takes one by one the examples, and it tests if the constraint is satisfied or not in the example. If it is if it is violated, it increases one metric and some metrics. And if it's violated, it increases a metric saying that it's violated in a positive example. Or if the example is not positive, it increases another metric. If it finds out in the process before testing all the examples that okay, this constraint is satisfied already in 20. Is violated already in 20 solutions, then it's not a constraint of my problem, so I can remove it safely. So that's based on the thresholds A and R that are given. Also, so it does not even need to go through all the examples. It can stop in the middle. Also, it can learn a constraint or remove a constraint based on this matrix going on through the example, some of the examples. This is much faster, of course. You don't have to go through all of the examples every time. This is very similar to the sequential probability ratio test. That's why it was also called SEC-ACK. And then it returns the set of constraints that it learned based on the thresholds. So it was found out to handle noise very well, and it's a very good approach if you want to handle noise in your training set, but it needs a lot of it needs a significant amount of data to work. Recently, another passive learning approach was proposed. So all the previous approaches were generate and test. You generate a constraint, you test if it is satisfied or if it's violated, and then you do something else based on that information. So CountCP is not doing generate and test. It's doing generate and aggregate. So basically, it does not get constraints. It gets expressions, numerical expressions, that it tries to find out the lower and upper bound of these expressions. Based on the lower and upper bound, you can represent many constraints of CP. For example, if you have like variable 1 not equals to variable 2, it can easily be expressed by the absolute value of the difference being greater than 0. So you have a language of numerical expressions and not constraints. You take each expression of the language, and you find the values, the bounds, based on the set of positive examples. I did not know this. It only needs positive examples to work. So based on the minimum and maximum value that it can take, the lower and upper bounds for the generated expressions, again, on all the possible scopes that it can be applied, it extracts the expressions with their bounds, and it tries to find first order constraints based on them. So it's basically, again, a pattern-based grouping like in Model Seeker. So you try to see if you have like similar expressions with similar bounds in the same row or in the same column of your problem or patterns given in general to CountCP. So based on this, you can also then find which parameter of my problem can express this bound, and you filter the constraints that cannot be grouped with any other constraints. So you think that these expressions with their bounds were just randomly found in the set of examples, so it's probably I have to remove them. And so it keeps only constraints that meet patterns. And it's a very good approach. So what did CountCP try to tackle? It tried to tackle, first of all, that it expresses constraints in a different way. So with expressing constraints with numerical expressions and lower and upper bounds, you can actually express a lot more constraints than just giving a small language to learn constraints from. Also, importantly, it tackles the fact that you need to generalize. You need to generalize to be able to apply the constraints that you learned in different instances of the problem. A very recent approach, around 1 year ago, was presented that actually breaks a bit the pattern, breaks a bit what I said in the beginning, that it uses the candidate elimination and language and goes on. So it's a passive learner that tries to learn in passive acquisition without using a language. It tries to find the language itself. So it does not get the possible relations from the user. It also tries to learn which relations are used in an extensional form. So it basically says, model the problem as a maxSAT problem and try to find a consistent set of constraints that agree with the examples and minimize the objective, what is the objective here? Try to find a language as smaller as possible. Don't use 20 different relations. And try to use language with a small arity. Don't use all the variables of the problem in the language, because then you can express just a table constraint with all the solutions you have and you found it. But no, you need to find small language. So it is shown to have good results, but basically you get constraints. A limitation is that you basically can get constraints in an exceptional form, showing the tuples of assignments that are satisfied or not, and not interpretable. So now it's time for the first break of the talk. So we discussed about the basic of constraint acquisition, how in general constraint acquisition works, about different methods for passive acquisition. This is getting out, okay. So different methods for passive acquisition, different approaches that try to tackle different cases in passive acquisition, and how they work in a very high level. So if you have any questions on this part, feel free to ask them now, so we can then be in the same, we can then continue without questioning why this happens and goes on. So please.
So when the data has errors, right, then they're going to do something else, but are they going to do some kind of sampling thing? Or because it might not be clear what are errors and what are not errors, right?
Yeah, so...
Because the user only says that this is positive and this is negative, but it may not be true.
Yeah.
Right, so, right. The positive could contain negative could contain positive, and so on.
Yeah, the user cannot know what is an error, because otherwise it will not give it. So, yeah.
So is there some kind of sampling and fair sampling, blah, blah, that kind of
thing? So most approaches don't accept errors. Like if you give an error label, it does not work. But so there are the two approaches that I discussed, SECAC and Bayesac. They don't need any information about errors. They just say probably the errors will not be too many. Like if they are too many, okay, then you cannot learn, it makes sense. So because the errors probably are not too many, I will just make a statistical test. If this constraint is violated only in one positive example, probably this is an error, so I will just learn it. If it's violated in all positive examples, in all solutions, I can safely remove it. So basically that's it. It's a statistical test based on some threshold. So there are thresholds actually that the user does not need to define exactly the threshold. There are thresholds that are shown to work pretty well in many cases.
Right, but depending how you do the statistical test, there could be bias in the test. That's why it's asked about sampling.
There will be bias in the test.
Right, so suppose you do the test sequentially, then definitely there is bias. Right?
Yes.
Because the things you tested in this direction, well, do it this way is different.
Yeah, so actually I think I think the authors of SECAC, that they do actually the sequential thing, they first shuffle the examples in order to take them randomly. But yeah, it's true, it's just a bias on how you may take all the erroneous one, and then yeah, it is not an exact approach. When you have errors in general, you cannot say that this is certainly correct.
I have one question, so maybe I missed. You give the examples and you also define the language that you will have in the CSP model, right or not?
Yes, yeah, you define the, not the constraints, like possible relations. So,
the
if
language.
You assume that it will have all different, then you have to give it all different, but not in specific variables. So basically the language defines how the candidate constraints are constructed. And it constructs many of them.
Okay.
To try to find.
Thank you.
So if we take a, let's call it a simple benchmark, like N-Queens, right? And N-Queens has an exponential number of solutions. So you would only, let's say, get a sample of it. And then we could choose to introduce errors into the samples and so forth. So after you have that, right? Then you use any of these approaches, could you get back the N-Queens model using three constraints?
Using three, you mean three all diff?
Yeah, the three all diff. Just three all diff, right?
So actually the only passive constraint acquisition method that works with all with global constraints and all difference is Model Seeker. Model Seeker needs a very small amount of examples to learn the actual constraint. Like, even with 5 examples, if you give it 5 examples, it will try to find patterns and like in the same row, same column, or same diagonal are typical patterns that it actually tries to find either way. So it would find them, but with a small catch. Model Seeker does not work with noise. If even one is different label, it will miss a constraint.
So I found one of the methods that tests constraints one by one with a little resemblance to FastDiag. FastDiag diagnosis algorithm. So I was hoping to see later something that would also make the consistency checks in a logarithmic form, like just like FastDiag. But I was I did not see it. So there is something I am missing.
No, so constraint acquisition in general, okay, I was going to say that it's a new topic. It's actually not so new. It's around, I will maybe mistaken, but it's around like 15 years topic. Yeah, it's not so new now that I'm thinking, but it's a lot of room to do things. Like, yeah, it's not everything has been covered. So yeah, I don't think you are missing something. Okay, if we don't have more questions, then we can continue with active acquisition. So here is my expertise. I've been working on interactive constraint acquisition from the beginning of my PhD. I did my PhD on interactive constraint acquisition. And now in my postdoc in Leuven, I'm also working. I continue working. And I will get into more details. So what is interactive acquisition? The acquisition system asks questions to the user labels them, says, this is a solution. So the acquisition system says, is this a solution of the problem? Yes, it is. No, it is not. And goes on. And based on this interaction, it extracts the set of constraints. So there are mainly 2 types of queries. There are a bit more, but we will not get into detail. There are mainly 2 types of queries. The membership query that asks, is this complete assignment to the variables a solution or not? And the user says yes or no. And there is a partial query, which is basically an assignment, just not complete. Some values are missing. And it asks the user, is there a problem here or not? So it basically asks if it's a partial solution or not, if there is any problem. Based on the answer of the user, the system will, again, remove constraints or learn constraints, and then proceed with finding the target, the learned constraints. So in these 2 queries, what is the answer of the user? We're using 4x4 Sudoku as an example, right? So in these 2 queries, the answer is negative in both, because we can see that it's a constraint violated. In the same row, we cannot have same values. So there is a lot of progress in interactive constraint acquisition in the last years. As you can see, especially the last few years, there are a lot of works. So why I saw it like this and I don't categorize like in passive acquisition? Because actually in interactive acquisition, there is a continuous progress. Methods built on other methods and they use basically a similar framework that try to improve and improve and improve more. In passive acquisition, there are more different approaches that try to tackle different things. So as we can see, there are a lot of works, especially in the last years, and there is again a lot more to be done. So I invite you to, when we show these figures in 5 years, to have also your works in there. But there is one problem here. There are many methods. Only a few of them have paper repositories that you can find and run the experiments. And there is no place that you can actually compare different methods with each other and be able to actually extend the methods and write your own based on the previous code. So that is until now. Because with the chance of this tutorial, I will present also a Python library for constraint acquisition, PyCona. It's a great name. You can find it here in the CPMPI organization of GitHub and in the barcode. So I just tell you, I would prefer if you go already on GitHub, because in a bit, after I present how interactive constraint acquisition works, we will go into a notebook and run something so you can take a more hands-on feeling of interactive constraint acquisition. So I will give 10 seconds more, so you either go to GitHub or do the barcode thing. Okay, let's continue and let's see how interactive constraint acquisition works. So in the start, we will show the framework now. In the start, an example is generating. An example equals an assignment to the variables of the problem. So an example is generated. It asks a query to the user if the example is a solution or not. And based on the answer of the user, you update your version space. So if the answer is yes, this is a solution to my problem, you eliminate violated candidates by removing basically the violated constraints from the bias because of the reasons we discussed before. If the answer of the user is no, this is not a solution to my problem, you try to learn violated constraints. So how do you do that? We will see it in a bit in more detail. Basically, you zoom in violated constraint scopes. You ask partial queries in order to see, okay, if I remove this variable, is it okay now or is it not? If I remove these assignments, and goes on. So it asks more queries. That's the important thing for this part. It asks more queries until it learns why it was not a solution. And then it goes back, it generates a new example, it asks a query to the user, and goes on. This process goes on until you cannot find an example to ask the user that you can get some information based on your candidate constraints, where you return, you have converged, and you return the set of constraints to the user. So this is a basic framework. So what challenges do we have here? We already have the framework, but what do we need to do in interactive constraint acquisition still? So we need to have a minimum number of queries, to minimize the number of queries. The user cannot sit there and answer thousands and tens of thousands of questions. The user needs to be able to finish as early as possible and solve their problem. We also don't want to have the user waiting too much. Like, we all have been in a computer, in a browser, that the website takes more than 5 seconds to load, and we are just annoyed. So we don't want the constraint acquisition system to annoy the user. We need to generate queries fast, so the user answers them and then goes to the next query and goes on. So these are the main two challenges right now in interactive constraint acquisition. Let's now see, take the framework part by part and see how the more specific things work. So the first part of the framework is the generate example. You need to generate a query to the user. So what does this query need to have? First of all, it needs to be informative. It needs to be able to give some information to the system, either by removing constraints from the candidates, by learning that some constraints are not part of the problem, or by acquiring the constraints. So the second part is that you need the query to be as good as possible, to get the maximum amount of information from each query. So if the more information you get from each query, the less queries you will need to do in the end. The third important part for query generation is convergence. So as we saw in the framework, how do we achieve convergence? When we see that no example can be generated. So we have to be able to verify that in a decent amount of time. So let's take them again one by one. So finding an informative query, how do you do that? So a query is basically finding an assignment to the variables of the problem, right? This sounds very much as a CSP itself. You model it, you give it to a solver, and you get an assignment to the variables, a solution to your query generation problem. And what is the query generation problem? you need to not violate any constraint that you have already acquired, you have already learned that it is part of the target problem. If you violate at least one, you already know that it will be a negative answer from the user. So you need to not violate them. But importantly, you need to violate at least one candidate constraint. Why? Because we know that, we assume at least that the candidate constraints contain the target constraints. So if you don't violate any, you know it certainly that the answer of the user will be yes. And you cannot know anything. The information we get is about the violated candidates. If we don't violate any, we don't get any information. So basically, it is formed as the CSP shown there. Find an assignment to the variables, an example. That is a solution of the length constraints and the disjunction, and not the disjunction of the constraints, the candidate constraints, that at least one needs to be violated. Okay, so we, okay, I explained this already. I forgot that I had this slide. Why do we need to generate this example? Because we learn only from violated constraints. So we form this CSP and we generate a solution and assume that we have 100,000 candidate constraints. And we violate one candidate in each query. We need 1,000 queries in order to remove all of them from the set of candidates. Do we expect the user to answer 100,000 queries? No. So we need to get the maximum amount of information. So how do you find better queries? We typically, in constraint acquisition until recently, this objective function was used in the logic that, okay, I need to violate many candidates to get as much information as possible. I get information for the violated candidates, so the more I violate, the more information I get. This is not fully aligned with the goal, but we will discuss this a bit later. So that's about the quality of the query. Let's now go to the convergence. We said that we converge when no informative query can be generated. But what if it is a very difficult problem to solve for the solver and it needs like 30 minutes to find a query or to be able to prove convergence? If you have a timeout, for example, in your solver, if you fail to prove unsatisfiability of the query generation problem, but you don't want the user to wait too much, you may have premature convergence. So finding an informative or irredundant query is not always so easy. We said, okay, this is the CSP, you give it to a solver, you get a solution. It's not easy. First of all, the set of candidates can be huge. The 100,000 that I said is a very normal number. You may have way more candidates in your constraint acquisition problem. So it's not always easy to basically give 100,000 constraints to the solver and get a solution. But this is one small part of the difficulty of the problem. Most importantly, constraints, candidate constraints, can contain indirectly implied constraints. So what does indirectly mean? It means being implied by combinations of constraints that you have already learned from different scopes. Because, okay, we know that the constraint X1 equals to X2 implies a constraint X1 less or equal to X2. But yeah, that's, a solver can find that directly, it's okay. But what if a constraint is implied by combinations of others? This, as we have shown in a paper, cannot be detected just by propagation. The solver actually has to go through the search tree in order to prove that there is no solution to violate these constraints on this assignment and go back and on the next assignment and goes on. So this is actually a very hard problem that query generation cannot easily find a solution on. And this indirectly implied constraints, so I write can contain implied, indirectly implied constraints, but actually it's the case always. Even in Sudoku, in the simple Sudoku, if you model it by not equal constraints, it has 110 constraints, that are, like for us, it's very logical. It's just the not equals between all pairs of variables in rows, columns, and blocks. Randomly, 648 of them imply the others, the rest. There is no like reason, that interpretable reason for that, but the solver cannot generate informative queries after a point, and it's just stuck there for a lot of time. So how do you solve that? Until recently, custom solvers were used in interactive query acquisition. The custom solvers were often deployed in order to tackle this by finding, if you cannot find a complete assignment in all the variables that violate at least one constraint, you just look for a subset of the variables. So this was basically by custom branching, by using optional variables. Not all variables have to be selected, and just choose any subset of variables that you can assign and violate at least one constraint from the candidates. So this needs some custom parts in the branching and how you select the variables. But recently, a projection-based query generation was proposed in the literature in order to be able to use black box solvers, conventional solvers, in order to generate queries in constraint acquisition. So the main logic is that, why do we need to generate a complete example? We only get information for constraints in the bias, in the candidate constraints. So we can just try to generate an assignment on the variables from these constraints. So indirectly implied constraints are, if all the candidates are indirectly implied, usually they are a very small subset of variables. So if you project down to these variables, you avoid indirect implications because you avoid taking into account constraints in variables that you don't care about. You don't get information about them. So you just project down and you solve a very simple problem in a smaller variable set. So with this, query generation actually can use now conventional solvers. So, and you can get as much information as possible with the objective function that we showed and goes on. Okay, you generate an example, you give it to the user. What happens after query generation? So, in this part. First, okay, eliminate violated constraints if the answer is yes. Very easy. You just remove constraints from a set. You can do that very easily. But what happens in the other case? We said that you know that at least one of the violated constraints is part of the target set of constraints. How do you find which one of them? You may have 1,000 constraints violated. How do you find which of them needs to be acquired and which ones not? So basically, this is a two-step process. First, constraint acquisition systems try to find a minimal conflicting scope, the find scope process that is typically called. And after you find the scope by exploiting, again, subqueries, removing variables assignments, as we will see in an example, to find the problematic part, after you find the scope, the variables that are problematic, then you focus only on these variables, and you generate different assignments to try to see which of the violated constraints in these variables needs to be learned. So let's take these two steps one by one. So how do you find the scope of a constraint? So we have this example. It's violated, so the answer of the user is negative. I have with red the variables that violate some constraints. So what do? We remove some assignments and we say, okay, this is okay, user. The user will say no, still some red stuff in there. Then let's remove more variables. Is this okay? Someone? So no, as Sam said. So this is not okay, it still has red stuff. So after I remove, again, half the variables, I can see that now it's okay. 1 and 3 in this row, it's okay. We don't have any problem. What do we know? What do we just learned? That in these two variables with the blue circle, after I removed them, it was okay. Before it was not. So they contain something problematic. One of these two variables is part of the scope of the constraint. So then you re-add one of them, and you know after the positive answer that the other one was a problematic. And then you continue like that. I will not show the whole process. You continue like that, and you find the scope of the constraint. Okay, we found the scope. We found that these two variables are problematic. How do we find the exact constraint? You may have, like, this violates the not equal. It violates also the greater than and the less than. How do you know which of the three you need to learn? So basically, you focus on that assignment. You ask queries with these variables. You ask queries on different assignments. And then you remove the constraints, some constraints based on the answer of the users. So from the first one, the answer is positive. Yeah, it is OK. So you can remove this candidate. Then I ask the second query. Is it OK? Yes, so you can remove the other candidate. So I had three candidates in this scope, so I know that the third one is OK. I just learned it. So you learn this constraint, and what do you do next? You go back to generate a new example and find a new constraint. So that is basically the QAQ algorithm for quick acquisition. It learns one violated constraint per generated example, if one exists, of course. And then it goes back, it generates a new one, and tries to find the new some other constraints, if some exist to learn. So what is problematic on that? The generated example may violate many constraints. Like in the example that we saw before, there were many constraints violated. Why just learn one of them and generate a new one? You can just learn them all. So that's multiple acquisition that tries to learn multiple constraints in its loop. So instead of going back to generate example, it just goes back to ask query. Remove the variables that were problematic from before so they don't affect the answer of the user, and then ask a query again. After you learn a constraint, go back, remove some more variables, ask a query again, and goes on. Until, of course, the answer of the user is yes, you have nothing more to learn, so you go back and you generate a new example. Okay, so we saw the main workings of interactive acquisition algorithms. But what if the set of candidates is too large? So I talked about 100,000. Actually, that's not too large. What if you have 1 million candidate constraints? What do you do then? Do you just handle 1 million constraints? Do you put in a set 1 million constraints and hope that your computer will be okay with it? And all the processes that you do go through 1 million constraints? And you give 1 million constraints to a solver? Like, even saying that, it's a bit funny. So can we handle it? Recently, a bottom-up approach was introduced using, actually in LastCP, a bottom-up approach was introduced using interactive constraint acquisition algorithms on a subset of variables. So, okay, I cannot handle all the candidate constraints in the full problem, just solve a simpler problem. So you get any interactive acquisition algorithm. We saw QAQ, we saw multiple acquisition. There are many algorithms for that as well. You can just take any of them. The algorithm can handle any of them. And you try to work on a subset of variables. You start with one variable. Can I learn something here? Okay, if I cannot, I add one more variable. Can I learn something in the first two variables of the problem? You learn what you can, you remove what you can remove, you learn what constraints you can learn, you add more variable. So in each iteration, you just need to represent in your set of candidate constraints, in your bias, only constraints that contain the newly added variable. So you don't need to represent a lot of constraints at each time. And after you learn the sub-problem, you add a new variable, you learn the rest of constraints. Until, of course, you reach the part that you have actually considered all the variables, and then you have converged. There is no more variable to add, no more sub-problem to solve. So we are done. So this is quite important for many reasons. First of all, you can handle a large set of bias, a large set of candidate constraints. But it also saves time to regeneration. So if I have like 3 seconds to generate a query so the user is not bored waiting, If I have these 3 seconds, instead of spending them just to put constraints in the solver and trying to find how to violate the zone, I can spend them, the 3 seconds, the 3 precious seconds that we have from the user's time, in order to generate a better query. And we will see in the next chapter how you can focus more on generating better queries to guide better constraint acquisition during query generation and basically during all the processes that ask queries to the user. But before that, let's chill a bit, let's take a break. We discussed interactive constraint acquisition, the basics of interactive constraint acquisition, how query generation works, how we can find the scope of the constraints of the problem, how we can find the relations of the constraints, and the growing acquisition process that sought to solve a lot of the problems. So now it's time for our second break, and you can ask questions or you can chill until we continue. And get the GitHub ready.
How do you evaluate the model generated?
The?
How do you evaluate the model generated?
The generated model. So all the constraint acquisition algorithms, the interactive acquisition algorithms, are exact. So they are...
But then they all give the same model.
Sorry? If you give them all the same language, the same candidate relations, then they will all return the same constraints. Depends, of course, on the language that you use. But yeah, they're proven to be exact. They always return. I would discuss this a bit later, but I will say it now. They don't handle noise.
Right, but that does not mean it's the best model.
There is no?
Sorry? It does not mean that it's the best model.
I cannot hear.
No, it does not mean that it is the best model.
So there is no best model. Well, the best model, you can find it if you give the best language, let's say. But there is a winner. The one that finds the model, not the best, the model faster. Like if one asks the user 5,000 queries to be able to find the model and another algorithm asks 500 queries, there is a winner. So basically that's why also I showed the main challenges, the main things that we focus on to evaluate the performance, how many queries, how much time the user has to wait, because yes, we may need less queries sometimes, but we have the user 30 minutes there. No, like, don't get him waiting. So basically, that's the two main things.
So not really a question. To come back to, you asked about Fastiag. And so if the user here says no, then you know that it's unsatisfiable. And the find scope algorithm that he explains, it's similar to Quick Explain, of which Fastiag is an improvement. So there would be opportunity, when the answer is no, to look into these kinds of algorithms.
Yeah, I think he also saw it, because I saw him laughing when I was explaining it. Here.
Thank you. Just a clarification, if you can clarify, when you say no example found, what do you mean there? You cannot find an example that violates constraints?
So no example found means, so we have the query generation problem, that is constraint satisfaction problem, if it returns unsatisfiable. So it cannot find a solution to the problem satisfying all the constraints we have learned and violating a candidate. So this can happen if there are no more candidates, for example. If all the candidates are implied by constraints that we have already learned.
So you said that any algorithm will find the same model. They will find equivalent models, right? Not the same.
Sorry?
They will find equivalent models, not the same.
Yeah, so they would find actually equivalent, because they may learn some implied constraints or not.
Yeah.
So some algorithms don't learn implied constraints, just remove them, some others learn them.
But it's not only implied constraints. You might have a set, if you have a set of 3 equals constraints, x equals y equals z, you'll need to learn 2 of them, and the third is redundant.
And yeah, so the redundancy is the implied, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's not at the time that you learn it, it's not implied.
Yeah, so it depends again on the algorithm. So some algorithms may just focus on these two variables that are remaining and actually learn, like the growing acquisition, like the query generation, the projection-based query generation. At that point, we'll say, okay, I have a candidate at these two variables. Let's focus only on this. So it will not take into account the other constraints. So it will actually learn it. So yeah, it depends on the method. Okay, so now it's time to go to PyCona. Now it's time to go to the notebook that I have prepared for interactive constraint acquisition in PyCona. So I hope you have found it already in GitHub. So I have a CP24 tutorial demo, and you don't see it yet. If you go either to that link or to GitHub and go to the notebooks, you can find it. It's a CP24 tutorial demo. And how do I close the presentation? Nothing is shown. Okay, problem solved. I probably have to change my settings. Okay, so I hope you found it, and I hope you try to play with it. So let's see an introduction to PyCona, our Python-based open source library for constraint acquisition. It is based. Yeah, also in the README, there is a link to Colab. Yes, you're right, yes. Yeah, so you can directly use from Colab. So it is based on the CPMPy constraint programming and modeling library. It includes a lot of algorithms, methods, and for the different parts, query generation, find scope, find C, and top-level algorithms that are presented in the literature, and also many commonly used benchmarks in many different papers in the literature. It's currently, note that it's currently only for interactive constraint acquisition. But there is an intention to also implement passive acquisition algorithms in it. So let's take a first look. It's based on CPMPy, so we can create variables from CPMPy in order to create our vocabulary. So it's we can just use intvars or boolvars or whatever we have. And yes, just run it. So here is our variables we created. A 4x4 matrix with variables from domains from 1 to 4, and we have to create also the language in order to give it to our system. So we said we give variables and language. So in PyCona we define abstract variables for that. So we can create abstract variables abs var and give the amount of abstract variables we want, as many as the high maximum arity of the constraints in the language, and then use these abstract variables in order to define relations to include in the language. We can define any relation we want. So then the problem will use these relations in order to just replace the abstract variables we have with normal variables of our problem in any combination that is possible. So now we can create our language. Here is the language created. And now that we saw the introduction on that, let's just see how we can create an actual problem instance that we can give to constraint acquisition algorithms to acquire the constraints. So here we have a simple construct nearest rostering function that takes parameters: how many shifts per day, number of days, number of shifts, number of nurses, and number of shifts per day. Of nurses per shift, sorry. Based on this, we can create our CPMPy variables, and we can create the language. I just use the same language as before, a very simple one. And we give the variables and the language in the problem instance to return it. So let's run this. And let's construct a very small Nerds Rostering instance. So we are going to run some algorithms. We don't want to use a big one now. So we construct this and let's print it. Yeah, it was already printed, I know. So the variables and the language of our instance to give to constraint acquisition. So in order to not answer the queries ourselves now, and in general, if you want to do experiments in big problems, you usually don't want to answer the queries yourself and answer yes or no, you can simulate the user. So how can we simulate the user? Here we can just create an oracle that can use any software system in order to be able to answer our question. Like we can create any custom function or use a system that can already tell us if a solution, if an assignment is a solution or not. This was done recently in an application of interactive constraint acquisition in an industrial problem. A company had a system that could say if it's, if something is a solution or not, but did not know why, so they used it to answer queries and learn the constraints. So how can we create here something to simulate the user? We can create a constraint oracle. So we model the problem, we give the constraints to it, so it answers, so we can evaluate our algorithms. So here we model the constraint, Nerds Rostering problem, so we get the variables from our instance, we model the different constraints that it has, now that we decompose, because interactive constraint acquisition methods, most of them at least, I will go into that more precisely in a bit, they don't work with global constraints. You need to decompose. And all methods implemented need that. So we decompose, we give the set of constraints to our constraint oracle, and we return the instance and the oracle. So let's now see how we can actually run an interactive constraint acquisition problem. We saw how to get the oracle and the instance, but how can we run it? So the core is the interactive CA, the algorithms interactive CA class. That is subclassed with different algorithms from the literature. We saw Quack, it is there. We saw MQuack, MQuack 2. There are, exist also some variations of them. So each interactive constraint acquisition algorithm has an environment, the constraint acquisition environment, that can configure the exact settings. Of course, there is a default. You don't actually need to use always to define your environment. But the environment can actually customize your algorithm by using different query generators, different functions for finding the scope of the constraint, different findC functions, so you can evaluate different algorithms and methods and combinations of them that have been presented in the literature. So let's go and very simply just create a Quack object using a constraint acquisition system using the Quack algorithm. And just by using the learn function of the constraint acquisition system, using, giving the instance, the oracle, and some verbosity. The default is zero. If you, if you use constraint acquisition in your system, you don't want it to print random stuff. So it, in zero, it does not print anything. Let's give verbose one. So it will start asking queries. Its dot is a query that it asked to our oracle that simulates the user. And L is when it learns a constraint. So it now runs and tries to learn the constraint of our problem, of our Nerds Rostering problem. In total, I think it has 34 constraints or something like that. Some patience is needed here. And yeah, I don't have anything more to say until it finishes. I hope many people run it also in your computers. And also, I hope many people pip install in their own computer PyCona. So it found 34 constraints in 249 queries. So I said that you can customize the environment. You can use different methods. So the default is to use PQGen, the projection-based query generation for query generation, find scope 2, a better find scope function, let's say, that asks less queries to find the scope of the user, and find C function. So now let's change a bit our environment to use the basic find scope function, the first one that was proposed. If we put this find scope to our environment and give this environment to our constraint acquisition system to Quark as an algorithm in the initialization. Then we create an object of Quark using the previous find scope. So now it tries to find with the previous find scope. I'm sure that everyone knows that it will need more queries, because basically the find scope 2 avoids asking queries that don't give us any information, avoids asking some queries and gets less queries. So if we use the basic version, we will need more. Now, it finished. So we can see actually the results in a nice data frame. So Quark with find scope 2 used 249 queries, and using the basic find scope, it needed 380 queries. So let's now increase a bit the verbosity. I will not run this, it's a bit more slower. So we can increase a bit the verbosity of our system. I put 2-3 here, so we get a lot more information during the acquisition process. So, okay, this is nice. You can see how it progresses, but you don't actually see what it happens in there if you want to inspect more the learning process. So here we can see, if we put the verbosity to a higher level, we can see the actual queries asked, the answers of the Oracle that simulates the user, and when it removes constraints or adds constraints and goes on. Let's go on to our next cell. So after it's run, it returns the learned instance. The learned instance contains the constraints that is it has learned. So we have the variables from before that we gave it, the language that we gave, but also the constraints that it learned. So, okay, we got the constraints. We don't care how they look. We just want to solve our problem. So we can very easily just get the CPMPy model and solve our problem and get a solution. From that, we don't understand many things, okay? Where is each nurse assigned, in which shift? We don't know, just from a tensor. So let's visualize the solution and then the queries. So we created a visualized nurse rostering function. Don't get into details on that. The important thing we need to keep is that it's in Python. We can visualize very nicely and quite easily. So here we use the visualize function in order to visualize our solution. And here is a way better way to see the solution of our problem. So here is in which shift each nurse is assigned. Can we use this visualization during the queries? So we saw the queries. It was like just a matrix printed. Like the user cannot understand this to answer. But we can use this. We can just give our visualization function to the visualize member of the instance that we want to learn. And after that, when we run the learn function, you can see that the query asks if this is a solution by visualizing the solution, and then the user answers and goes on like that. So by giving a visualized function for our problem, what we can code it and do it as much as we want, so we can basically define the acquisition visualization. So let's go a bit back down. So here we can see about multiple acquisition. We saw that you can there are more algorithms than Quark in order to acquire constraints that can acquire multiple constraints per generated query. So here we will compare also mQuark and mQuark2 and then GrowQuark. So let's start running this. I have zero verbosity, just let them run. We will get the statistics later. And we will run also GrowQuark in order to be able to compare all algorithms, Quark, GrowQuark, mQuark, and mQuark2, and just get the table that we can easily use in our paper when you want to work on constraint acquisition and you want to make experiments. You can see that very easily you can get the table that you will put in your paper directly from PyCona. Okay, so the other run. Now we run GrowQuark and it will give us a nice data frame. I hope fast. Yes, okay. So here we have our table. So learn constraints, same for all here. Total queries used, same. We can see that it goes a bit down with multiple acquisition, a bit up with GrowQuark. Why? It's a small problem. In larger problems, it can have a lot better performance. Okay, so that's the introduction to PyCona. There is more. stop there, don't go further down in the notebook if you actually play with it, because let's continue the presentation in the third part. Just on time. Oh. Chill a bit. Okay, so we were left here. So we said that with Growak, we want time. We have more time to generate our queries, and we are able to generate better queries. What can we do with them? So recently, prediction-based interactive constraint acquisition systems were introduced in the literature. Let's now delve more into the quality of the query. So we said better generated examples lead to faster convergence. More information per query, less queries. We said that this objective function is typically used, just violate as many as possible and hope that it will help us. But it's not fully aligned with the goal. But what is the goal, really? So we said, we ask a query. In case of positive answer from the user, what is the best thing that I can do? If I know that the answer will answer yes, I can indeed violate as many as possible, because the more I will violate, the more I will remove from the candidates. So this aligns with the goal, with the objective function. But what happens if the user answers negatively? So in case of a negative answer, we want to find which of the violated constraints is actually part of the problem, and we want to do it fast. So if I have one violated constraint in the best case, I don't need to ask any more queries. I directly know that this is the one, the problematic one. But if I have 1,000 constraints violated, I will need a lot of queries to find out which of the 1,000 is the problem. So the less constraints violated in this case, the better. So this is exactly the opposite of our objective function. But what can we do? It's opposite objectives based on the future answer of the user. So what can we do here? We cannot know the answer of the user before we ask the query. So until now, it was maximize violations. But what if we can predict if a candidate is a constraint of the problem or not? So assume that we can predict. Assume that we have an oracle that can tell us this is a constraint that you should learn and this is a constraint that you should remove. We can generate a query that we can target for positive or negative answers and manipulate what constraints we violate based on that. So this was an objective function that was recently presented. We will not go into detail, don't get scared about it. But basically, it's if the constraint C is violated, it's good, increase the objective function. So it's maximize violation. Except if the constraint is predicted to be true. If it's predicted to be true, big penalty, don't violate that. So basically, you can see the oracle here. Basically, the objective function is this thing. If the prediction is no, this should not be learned, just violate as many as possible. If a constraint is predicted to be true, satisfy it. We don't want it to be violated because we don't want the answer of the user to be no. Why? The why is on the blue box. M first for positive answers. Try to remove as many constraints as possible in the first queries, satisfying the ones that would make the query negative and violating all the rest. And when you have removed all of the ones that we don't care, violate the other ones one by one, so we don't need additional queries to learn them. So it's exploiting this maximize in positive queries, minimize in negative queries with this objective function. So this is for top-level query generation, but we don't only ask queries there. We ask queries also in find scope and in find C. What do we do there? Can we formulate like that? Basically, it's exactly the same with some minor modifications. So here we can decide like that with the same objective function how the removed variable assignments are decided. We try also in find scope to remove as many constraints as we can and then focus on the one that we are searching for. And it's the same for find C for finding the exact constraints. Again, with minor assignments, basically by focusing on the scope of the constraint. That's the modification here. So we have these objective functions to generate better queries, but we miss something. Do we have an oracle to decide if it's something is a constraint that should be learned or not? We don't. But it's a prediction problem. We can use machine learning here. So we can basically attach a machine learning component before query generation. Machine learning component predicts which constraints are part of the problem or not, give these probabilities to query generation. The oracle decides what to do with the constraints, violate them or not, generate a query, and goes on. So basically, after you remove constraints or you learn constraints, you have a constraint data set that you update, and you go back to query generation, train again, predict again, and goes on. Note that, importantly here, the predictions are not for variable assignments, are not for the queries. We don't predict if a query will be true or not. We predict if a constraint should be learned or not, and based on that, we construct the query. So how do we do the data set? So importantly, note that the data set in the beginning is empty. We don't know anything. But during the acquisition process, you learn some constraints and you remove others. So you construct the data set during acquisition. When a constraint is learned, you add a positive instance. When a constraint is removed, you add a negative instance. And you use some features, some characteristics of the constraints to describe them in the data set. And based on these features, the classifier can implicitly learn some patterns in your constraints that can help in identifying what is a constraint that should be learned or not. So here are some example features, some relation-based features, like what is the relation of the problem? Is it variable 1 not equal variable 2 of the constraint, sorry? Variable 1 not equal variable 2 or something else. If it has a constant, what is the constant value? It goes on. And there are some scope-based features. Scope-based features, like based on the variables that exist in the constraint, are they in the same row, in the same column? What is the distance between them? Like you may have constraints in between all variables that have a distance, let's say 5 in the first dimension or in the second dimension. In real problems, this is in the number of days or in the number of shifts in our nerve processing problem. So based on these features that you construct, your classifier can actually learn implicitly some patterns that may exist in the problem. Here is an example with the 4x4 Sudoku. We have x11 and x12, not equal to x12, and here are the features for this constraint. So the same value, same dimension, let's say, same index in the dimension, it has a true in the first because they are on the first row, and false in the second because they are not in the same column. And goes on. So we have created the data set. We can just give it to the classifier, get the class, and the class can be the oracle, right? So this is the above case. We can just get the class, and based on the class, decide what to do during query generation. But we can also use probabilities. And why are the probabilities important? Because then we can manipulate. Perfect. We can manipulate exactly after which probability we want to actually to violate it or satisfy it based on the expected number of queries. How we can find the expected number of queries? Find scope and find C have average cases of the number of queries that can do. So you can see how many variables I have, how many queries I would need to focus on the specific scope and goes on. So if I take this into account, I may need a lower probability to be considered actually a constraint of the problem. So using predictive probabilities and not directly the class works way better. Why? Because it basically says, like, even if it's 30% the probability, assume that it is a constraint of the problem, because like that, if you assume this, we will minimize the number of queries. So that's how the threshold is defined. And importantly, this basically transforms interactive constraint acquisition from just acquiring the constraints of the problem with a search-based method, now also learning the patterns of the problem. It learns the patterns that we have constraints in the same row, in the same column, and goes on with the statistical learning component. And then the search-based method is used to confirm if what we have learned is correct or not. So now I think it's back to the demo time. So let's go back to the demo to run the rest of the notebook. Where is the demo? Not here. Here. So we run GrowAcc, and now it's time to go to the prediction-based constraint acquisition systems. So we have two types of environments. We discussed about the environment that we can give to our algorithm. The one that we saw was the basic one. The basic environment that can define query generation, find scope, and find C. But there is also the probabilistic environment, proba-active CA-env, that also has two more options. It has two more configurable options that are the classifier to be used, what classifier will be used to predict the probabilities that goes on, and what feature representation can be used. You can actually define your own feature representation of constraints in order to construct the data set. So let's compare now the probabilistic approach with the basic environment. Here we create GrowAcc. Importantly, the default is the probabilistic environment for GrowAcc. It's the best one that has been presented in the literature. So we don't need to actually create it, but we would create it like that. And we will learn by using the probabilistic environment now. So in the second one, in the second cell, we will just combine the new results with the probabilistic environment for GrowAcc with the previous results for GrowAcc that it used here, the basic environment. So, okay, did it run? Yes, it did. So time to print our new results. So here is a very nice data frame. I remind you can use it directly in your paper if you do your own experiments. So for this problem, we can see a very huge decrease in the number of queries when we use the probabilistic environment, going down from 197 to only 87 queries. A very nice thing to see here is that we basically use only top-level queries from a basic generate example, and very few find scope and find C queries. Why is that? Because it does such a good job that we don't need find scope and find C in order to find the violated constraint, because we violate only one when we have reached at that point, because our classifier knows that you have to violate only this in order to learn it. And we don't need additional queries. So, okay, we have the probabilistic environment. So we have the probabilistic environment. We use the default settings, but what if we want to take experiments with different classifiers? We can change the classifier used here. So the default one is a decision tree, simple one, but it has shown great results. But we can use different classifiers. Like here, we can give a different classifier to our probabilistic environment, run GrowAcc, create GrowAcc with a new environment, and run it. And yeah, it just runs. So we can actually here see the results, the original results with the decision tree. The new results with the new classifier that we used, a bit more queries. It's a bit worse due to the We assume at least that it's due to the feature independency assumption. And we have the basic one, no probabilistic environment, that needs a lot more queries. So we have a very nice comparison here. But we use the default feature representation. It's a very good one. It was presented in a paper with great results. But someone may need to use his own feature representation. Can we write our own? Yes. So we have the feature representation class for feature representations that can be subclassed. So we create a very simple one here, simple relation. So we characterize our constraint only by the relation. If it's not equal, equal, and goes on. Only by the relation of the constraint. So can we use this to predict? We defined it. And we create a probabilistic environment using as feature representation the one that we just defined. And let's run it and compare the results. I hope it's done fast. We don't have much time. Yes. So we see a very minor increase. OK, it's also a small problem. That's why the increase is very minor. But also, because even just knowing, the classifier now knows that not equal constraints good, all other relations bad. So even just with that, the number of queries is decreased by a lot, even with a very single feature. So just as a last note here, PyCona has implemented various approaches and methods from the literature. You can see here and all the references. And the, we want to implement as many as possible additionally. So also authors of papers are welcome to implement their method and open a pull request. Let's go back for the conclusions. Okay, I have some other directions here, but cannot go through them. So what are the open challenges? Let's go back to here. Yes. So what are the open challenges? First of all, is interactive constraint acquisition done? Is it great to go and use directly to your problem? Has things to be improved still? And that's why we presented PyCona, in order to give an open library that you can use to, for experiments, you can extend easily for your own methods. So to promote, something happened, to promote research in interactive constraint acquisition to exactly to overcome these challenges. So first of all is the number of queries. It's still very large in, for real problems, for real-sized problems. So there are some directions here. Use more expressive types of queries, generalize during learning, and goes on. So it's a very important challenge to be tackled. Another one is to be able to handle specific classes of constraints, like global constraints, linear inequalities, and goes on, that they explode, basically, the size of the candidates and need to be able to handle it in a decent way in the future work. Finally, noisy data. We saw some methods in passive acquisition, but in interactive acquisition, don't ever make an error in an answer. It just collapses. So this is a very important next step. And the tighter integration with modern machine learning techniques, statistical machine learning, like the classifiers that we saw, can be a stepping stone towards that. And so concluding, we saw significant advancements in interactive constraint acquisition in the last years. So we saw the timeline. And that statistical machine learning can be successfully used to capture the patterns, but still much more is needed. And that's why PyCona is here. Thank you.